Joining me in studio now is Dawn Leslie. She is running for county commissioner to replace the leaving Jay Bozovich. She is one of several candidates who are out there right now trying to vie for this position. And Dawn, before we get into where you are now, let's talk a little bit about where you came from. Just let listeners know a little bit about who you are and what your background is.
Yeah. Thanks for that, George. Thanks for having me here to talk with you today. I am an engineer. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of Oregon. I've spent almost 30 years cleaning up dirty water. So I work in the wastewater industry, planning and designing wastewater treatment plants, and specifically in the last 10 years, focusing on energy efficiency projects at wastewater plants, so making the wastewater industry as energy efficient as we can. So I've been protecting human health and the environment for almost 30 years, and I live in the Santa Clara area of Northwest Eugene. I've been in Oregon for 30 years, and I came to Oregon to go to Oregon State University Engineering School and fell in love with Oregon and stayed here. And my son is a senior in high school, so I'm also a mom, and I'm a community volunteer. I've volunteered for lots and lots of community organizations over the years living here as well.
Now, 8 years ago, there was also a run that you participated in. Tell me a little bit about that and why you got into it initially.
So I have been concerned for quite a while about county politics and about the need for the county to be working, to be focused on the future, to be working towards solutions to some of the challenges facing us. Whether it be, impacts of climate change, rural broadband internet access being lacking in the rural areas, public safety, problems with public safety, especially in the rural areas, and, droughts, wildfires. I mean, there's a lot of challenges facing us. That was well before COVID-19, but still a lot of challenges facing the community and an awful lot of, let's just say, fighting between factions and not working together on solutions. And I'm an engineer, so I'm about creating common sense, practical solutions. And I didn't see a lot of that happening at the county level and was concerned about my son's future and all of our kids' future is what motivated me to run. I've never held public office, but I just stepped up because I was, at the time, my son was in third grade, actually, when I first started this crazy political thing. And, he's learning about democracy, and I'm telling him this is how democracy works, is if you don't like things, you got to step up and, be a part of it. And
you kind of guilt yourself there at that point?
There's a little bit of that. I got to look my son in the eye and say, yeah, there's a lot wrong, and I sure hope you solve it in the future. No. there's a lot wrong, and I got to step up and solve it or help lead better solutions if he's going to have a reasonable future.
Now, you talked before we came on the mic about wanting to be a unifier or being a unifier and, bringing people together. One of the biggest issues that we talk about, and you don't really think of it in county politics as much, but we should, and that was the fact you mentioned climate change. Heard mm-hmm. a report the other day that within the next 10 years, we could have a foot rise in sea level, which will definitely affect the coast here. And then the coast has different issues than, say, East Lane. How do you talk to people that don't necessarily go with, what the common belief among scientists is about global warming?
So we don't have to agree on how we got here, but it's in everybody's deeply aware. We're in the 13th year of a drought in Oregon, and that's affecting our farms and agriculture. That's affecting our forests. Everybody who cares about the forest, which, by the way, is everybody in Oregon, whether you're right, left, urban, rural, wherever you're from, everybody cares about our forests and our farms, and they're all suffering over a decade of drought, and it's not going away anytime soon. And then you add wildfires on the top of that. Nobody's arguing about whether there were wildfires a couple years ago. So And whether there are more wildfires coming in the future because of drought and increased temperatures. And we haven't even, you mentioned, fisheries impacts are huge. And the men and women in the fishing industry have been living these impacts for well over a decade already. So there's this tendency to push climate change as if it's this future thing we have to worry about. And it's true. There's definitely future problems facing us. because of our inability to work together on this thing and to create common sense solutions and to just stop arguing with each other about it, we are all feeling the impacts already. And so we don't have to fight about whether or not there's a drought. We know there's a drought. We're living it. We know these things are impacting us, our health right now. So rather than, you know, spending time arguing about who did what and what's causing what, we can just work together on the solutions to the very real problems that are facing us.
What do you see are some of, including climate change, if you want to include that in there, what do you see are some of the major issues that are affecting, say, West Lane County, which will be an area that you will obviously be asked to be involved in? What do you see some of the major issues there? I mean, obviously, you know, we talk fisheries.
Flooding. Cushman's already underwater too much of the time. That's not getting better anytime soon.
But some people say, "Hey, just lift the road up."
That might be part of a solution, right? But you know, we're not. Yeah, there have to be a lot of commitment to working to dropping the arguments and working together on practical solutions. That's what we need, and that means listening to each other, and that means respecting each other's perspectives and actually bringing in as many perspectives as possible so that we get the most robust solutions that we can get. That comes when we have diverse perspectives represented in the room and we listen to each other.
I hear that and I understand that. One of the things that we've noticed happening in our communities as well as in our politics is this lack of desire to understand the other perspective on that. And in county politics, even though it's a nonpartisan situation, you have people with opinions, beliefs, and views. Give me an example of a way that you would work with someone in an opposing belief system to meld that and to cross that divide there.
So starting in 2013, when I ran the first time, and then fast forward to now when I'm back on the doors, I've knocked on thousands of doors across West Lane County. And it is really clear to me that we agree on an awful lot across these so-called divides. So just the other day, I was at a person's door who, the minute I said county commissioner, he said, "Well, I just want to know, do you think the police are bad guys? Because I retired 30 years from the police force." And he started off on a rant about how police aren't racist. And he is just absolutely fed up with hearing. And I listened and I listened and I listened. And pretty soon he said, "I know there are problems in the police force and we have to address those. And I'm a founder of the CAHOOTS program. And I think we started there."
And there was your common ground.
There was their common ground. CAHOOTS is a nationally recognized... I have no issue or problem with the first part of his commentary. I was listening to him. I want to hear how it feels to be on the police force and be lumped together as if all police officers are the same and there's this terrible problem and all police are racist, right? That can't feel good on a day-to-day basis to work in that environment. And obviously, that's not even the truth.
Right.
So now, but just being listened to allowed him to open up to the piece about, "I know there are problems and they need to be addressed," which to me is a great place to start. Him being able to listen to me. What are the problems? Let's talk about that. How can we address them? Can we start creating solutions rather than me, one person taking one corner and the other person taking the other corner and just glaring at each other? Can we find a place in the middle? So by listening to him, he got to a place that said, "I know there are problems, we can address them," and then volunteering the CAHOOTS piece. CAHOOTS is not only successful in Lane County and being adopted as a model around the country. And I was able to acknowledge him for that. "Really, did you help develop the CAHOOTS program? That's great. It's obvious." I watched it in action as a volunteer at the Egan Warming Center. There was a person going off in a way that could have been dangerous. And I watched a crew from CAHOOTS talk this person down to a reasonable place. And he voluntarily got in their van with them and drove away to go get some help. And I know they're good at what they do. And I've had a conversation recently with Sheriff Harold, and he agrees, like, the CAHOOTS folks are very skilled at de-escalating mental health crisis situations and substance abuse crisis situations in ways that the police aren't trained to do and that they don't want to be doing. So CAHOOTS is a great model, and I could talk to that person on the door with, thank you for helping bring that to us. Let's talk about what the issues are and how we can start to solve them. And that there's no it's not rocket science here. It's just the human decency of being willing to open up to the humanity in another person and listen to that person and find out where we have some common ground so that we can start working together.
I think a lot of times people get shut down by other people before they get a chance to get things off their chest.
Yes.
You know, and it's an important thing to get things off their chest. And I'm not associating certain belief systems with mental health, but in the mental health aspect of it, when you get a person talking to the point where they get to what their point is, then some healing can be done. And I think that's a major point that you've just made there, is that when someone gets to get out what's on their chest, then they can move forward.
Nobody likes to be lumped in with a group, whether it's left or right or Democrat or Republican or urban or rural. We just had a meeting this morning in Mapleton, and a rural resident was telling me she doesn't like to be called a redneck. Like, nobody likes to be just lumped into a group and have an assumption made about what that means about it. It's very dehumanizing. We're all individuals, and we come to things from our own personal experience, and there's value in everybody's perspective. And we have to be willing to listen to each other. And it's. I think there is a lot of, you know, to your point, there's a lot of shutting down and a lot of fake listening, where a person starts to talk and the other person is already developing their next talking point. So they're not really listening. They're just being quiet while they wait their turn. And that's not listening. Listening is really hearing the person, hearing what's under, you know, taking the time to hear to let that person get to their feelings and get to their points and really understanding that person.
That's one of the reasons I interview a lot of people all the time, and they go like, well, what are your questions? And I said, no, if I have questions, then I'm focusing on what the next question is rather than listening to mm-hmm. what you're saying. I think I want to ask you a question about the finances of the county, but I want to say to you and see if you agree to this. Very few of us individuals are one-dimensional. I mean, I have things on the right, the center, and the left that I agree on,
yep.
and that I find value in. So I don't know what that makes me on the political scale, but it just means that I have empathy for all different aspects of what's out there. Is that something you can talk to people about and relate to people about?
Yes. I grew up in a blue-collar family, and now I have a fancy education, and I get to do all this, you know, fancy engineering stuff. It's very technical. All of that informs who I am, and that's true for everybody. Everybody has a variety of life experiences that inform their opinions, and everybody is growing and changing all the time, hopefully. So you have pieces of you that go all the way back to when you were a kid, and that made sense, and it still makes sense. And then some things don't make the same sense anymore, and we've grown and adjusted some things. So that's pretty variable, and everybody's, as you said, I really don't think anybody's one dimensional. Everybody has that variety of influences that shapes who they are.
It's funny because you talk about, you know, nobody wants to be pigeonholed into a certain
yep.
group. I think, for example, and you know, this is where you're concerned. You're an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind, well, this person's very technical. They probably don't use common sense in the same way we do, because they have the certain mold. But if we do that and we pigeonhole people there, we don't give them the opportunity to be, you know, human, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you about the financial aspect of the county. I mean, I've talked to Jay Bozovich before, and he's like, he's always touting what good financial shape we're in compared to where we were 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you see that in the county as well? And we could move to other issues because of that, or do you still think there's work to be done there?
Well, I am grateful to Commissioner Bozovich for his big issue, as I recall, coming into office was he was concerned that the county budget was not structurally balanced and that annual operating expenses were not covered by annual revenue, and that meant, you know, using reserves just to get your going into reserves every year to cover basic operating expenses. So that structural balancing of the budget was the main reason, I think, that were one of the main reasons he ran. And they made the good choice of hiring the county administrator, Steve Mokrzyjewski, and that board, and with, you know, so not Jay single-handedly, but right. That was a goal of his, and we are on much better footing as a county because of that commitment that he made and that vision that he had. And I think that's important going forward. You know, it's over an $800 million budget. Is it sufficient? Well, some things are and some things aren't. Public safety isn't sufficiently funded, although there's good news in these last couple weeks because Ron Wyden and Peter DeFazio and their positions at the federal level got some more secure rural schools funding brought home to the county to fund 8 more important positions at the sheriff's department. So not that that solves everything. But it's actually a little bit bigger than a baby step. That's a really nice step and a real achievement from our federal delegation. And it's going to help with the public safety scenario. But, you know, are we where we need to be? I would like to see us, you know, healthier as a county. In terms of, you know, local economics needs to improve, and there's, you know, things we can do.
Homelessness mm-hmm. and mental health, two huge issues.
Yes.
Everywhere, not just Lane County.
Right.
How do you look at the county commissioners? What should their approach be in order to help alleviate some of the problems? Obviously, homelessness is not going to go away. It's been around forever. It's getting worse with certain things, COVID and everything else going on there. But yet, these human beings need some kind of safety. Talk to me about your position on that.
There's half of the unhoused population in Lane County have jobs. I hear at the doors an awful lot of people say, those people should just get jobs. Half of them have jobs, and minimum wage is not adequate. It doesn't get you there. In fact, you know, two minimum wage jobs almost doesn't get you there if you can get them, right? So to be able to afford rental, certainly never buying anything at anything close to minimum wage in Lane County. So wages are not adequate to fund your basic, you know, low-income housing. And the other piece about they should just go get a job is, you know, this mental health piece, right? There are a whole lot of people in our community who are not capable of holding down a job right now because of their mental health. They're not healthy enough. And so, yes, we need services. Now, those are two parts of the unhoused population that have very different needs. Then you also have young people entering the workforce that are still living with their parents, if they're lucky to have that resource, right? You have veterans who, for various reasons, maybe aren't accessing all their benefits because they don't have the wherewithal to figure out how to access all their benefits.
High school students that are couch surfing,
yes,
because they don't have a secure home.
Yes. And the solutions to all these different populations need to be different. But what we are doing by saying, oh, all the solutions are very expensive, when we don't address them head on and create solutions, we end up with the most expensive result, which is people getting to the point where they end up in the criminal justice system. which further strains our inadequate public safety funds, right? People's health condition getting to the point that they end up in an emergency room. We're not going to turn them away from the emergency room. Nobody wants to live in a community where if you walk into the emergency room with an emergency, they won't serve you because you don't have money. What kind of community would that be? But these are not smart or cost-effective ways to deal with the problem is you know, right, having it all slide downhill until they end up cycling through the criminal justice and emergency room systems. So clearly we need, you know, more housing, more shelter kinds of options. We have been underbuilding housing. Part of why everything's so overpriced is because we've been underbuilding housing for over 40 years.
Inventory,
yeah. Basic inventory. So we need all the kinds of housing. We need, you know, permanent supported housing. We need low income housing. We need middle housing. We need all the kinds of housing and more of it. And fortunately, the county has been collaborating better with the cities and, you know, bringing in more federal dollars, state dollars, public-private partnerships. That's all. Actually, a lot is happening on that front. There's been a lot of housing built in the last couple of years, and there's a lot more about to be built. And shelter services are starting, you know, more shelter beds are being built. So we're moving forward. And I think that's great. And having another commissioner on the board who's willing to support that effort and not block those things and is would, you know, something I have to offer is to be supportive of that effort. Can we build more public-private partnerships? Can we find more federal and state dollars? Can we be more creative about, I don't know if it's converting more hotels into shelter space. I know I thought that was a pretty creative solution. The county bought a hotel to house victims of the Holiday Farm fire. And ultimately, when those families go back upriver to their newly constructed community, their reconstructed community, that the intention is for that hotel to be turned into some kind of shelter care space. Great. What other creative solutions can there be? I think there's a lot of opportunities to be more creative about it. I talked to a realtor in the Junction City area who's been running a boarding house for the last 12 years. And I think of boarding houses as like, I think of old novels or something, you know, back in England.
It's a wonderful life.
In England, right? They had boarding house. Well, there's actually a functioning boarding house. It's been almost a dozen years in operation in Junction City. And I talked to the gentleman who owns it, and he said, well, it's a good solution for those 12 people. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that sort of thing still existed or was even possible, but I'm curious about, well, let's look at how is that working? What does it take to do that? Are there permit barriers to that? And how can we alleviate that? Can we make it, are there regulatory things in the way? Why aren't there more of them? I wonder, and I don't know, but I would be curious in exploring what can we do to encourage more of that diversity of housing stock, because some solutions are going to work really well for some people and not for others. I've been very supportive of, I'm on the board of my neighborhood association in Santa Clara, and Square One Villages just got the keys to Peace Presbyterian's church site on River Road. It's a 2-acre site, I want to say. Maybe it's more than that, 3-acre site. I might get the acreage wrong. But it's a great big field on River Road with a church on the back of the property. And they've created, Square One Villages has brought, they're a nonprofit organization that has brought in federal and state dollars and private dollars, right, their donations base, to work with the church community so that now Square One Villages will own this property and is going to develop 70 units of co-op housing that is built into their charter, that it will always be, when we say affordable, that's just it's kind of a silly word. Senator Manning says, if you have $1 million, then $1 million home is affordable. It's basically, it's low income housing, and it's going to be designed from the beginning and in perpetuity, it will stay low income housing. No barrier to get in. You have to, in terms of a financial barrier, But if you get selected, if you meet the criteria and you're selected to be one of the 70 families in this housing development, you become a co-owner of the co-op. And over time, you can build equity. Hmm. And if you live there long enough, you can end up selling out for up to $16,000 in equity. That is a nice little nest egg to then move on and get into a starter home of your own of some different kind. Or if you're an elderly person who is on a fixed income, you can just live there as if it were a rental until, you know, as long as you want, as long as it works for you. I think that's the monthly payment that you'll make is scaled to your income, regardless of whether your income is, you know, Social Security income or minimum wage job, whatever your income is, your rent, if you will, your monthly payment, it's not really rent because you're a co-owner, but your monthly payment is scaled to up to a certain percentage, I want to say 25 or 30% maximum of your income. So you, on a permanent basis, we know you can afford to live there. And that's pretty cool. And if you live there long enough and you want to and you start doing better and you start, you know, developing the ability for something more bigger or more expensive, you are building a little tiny nest egg. That doesn't happen in a rental.
No.
So I think that's a very exciting model of a public-private partnership that is going to provide 70 families with very affordable housing and the ability to get into the real estate market and build wealth over time.
I'm speaking with Dawn Leslie. She is running for county commissioner, and we've been talking a while without interjecting that, and I like to do that from time to time, just like in a commercial. You want to make sure you tell people who we're listening to. We got to end up here because time's running short. Elevator speech. You know, if you're in an elevator, and tell me why we should vote.
That's always challenging for me. Brevity is not my natural.
We'll give it a shot.
My natural.
I mean, we've heard a lot from you, so I think people are getting the idea of who you are. So just summing it up in a quick rundown to the first floor.
I'm Dawn Leslie, and I'm running for Westland County Commissioner out of a fierce sense of urgency for creating the kinds of solutions that our children are going to need in the future. We need to have practical, common sense solutions to the things facing us, from the COVID pandemic to affordable housing, mental health and addiction services, access to rural broadband, public safety. All of these things are going to need attention and smart solutions. But the thing that most endangers us is our inability to talk to each other across really invented divides, so-called divides, rural, urban, Democrat, Republican, right, left. It's a nonpartisan seat for a reason. So I am running for this seat in order to represent Westland County and to bring my best creativity and my heart and my listening ears and my best skills at unifying people and finding the common ground so that we can work together to create solutions.
Thank you so much, Dawn Leslie, running for county commissioner. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, George. It was really wonderful talking with you.
Coming up next on Our Town, I'll speak with Republican gubernatorial candidate Christine Drazen on the March edition of Our Town.